Welcome back to Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. I'm your host, Cindy Sheehan, and you're listening at CindySheehanSoapbox.com. Our very special guest today is Arun Gandhi. Arun was born in 1934 in Durban, South Africa. He is the fifth grandson of India's legendary leader, Mohandas K. Mahatma Gandhi. Growing up under the discriminatory apartheid laws of South Africa, he was beaten by white South Africans for being too black and black South Africans for being too white. So Arun sought eye for an eye justice. However, he learned from his parents and grandparents that justice does not mean revenge. It means transforming the opponent through love and suffering. In addition to being an internationally sought-out speaker, Arun is the author of several books. The first, A Patch of White, is about life in prejudiced South Africa. Then he wrote two books on poverty and politics in India, followed by a compilation of M.K. Gandhi's Wit and Wisdom. He also edited a book of essays on World Without Violence, Can Gandhi's Vision Become Reality? And more recently, wrote The Forgotten Woman, The Untold Story of Kastur, the wife of Mahatma Gandhi. He wrote it jointly with his late wife, Sunanda. Arun, welcome to Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox.
Thank you very much for having me on your show.
Well, thank you for doing us the honor to be here. And before we get into talking about your grandfather, a person whom, you know, myself and my listeners feel very attached to, I read that you're building an orphanage in honor of your late wife, Sunanda, in rural India. How's that project going?
It's going pretty well. You know, it's not really an orphanage. It's more like a rehabilitation center. Because the children that we are going to rescue are children who live in extreme poverty and have to work from the age of 4 and 5, go out begging or do some kind of work to earn a livelihood. And I think that's tragic that, you know, so many millions of children have to suffer this in the 21st century. So the this place that we are building will house them, will also give them some education plus vocational training and, you know, bring them up to speed so that they can break out of that cycle of poverty. And perhaps the unique thing that we are trying to do here is for those children who have parents, we want the parents to be involved in the process also so that they can get educated and they can also break out of the cycle of poverty. Because my feeling is that when you take a child away from the family and give that child education, instead of helping the whole family, the child then breaks away from the family because he or she is too ashamed to go back into that poverty. Mm-hmm. And so it destroys the family. And we don't want to do that. We want to keep the family intact and, you know, try to help the whole family break out of poverty so that everybody can be rehabilitated.
Well, and that's so important because it does seem like the global neoliberal policies do try to separate families. Was this something that your late wife was very interested in? Was this her passion?
Yes, it was. You know, she was a trained nurse, and we decided soon after our marriage that we didn't want to pursue materialism, mm-hmm. that one person could earn a living for the family and the other person would do social work. And since she was a nurse, she was better qualified to do work among the poor people. So she devoted a lot of her time to doing that and devising various kinds of projects to rehabilitate the poor and through self-help methods. And during that process, we found many little babies who were abandoned by their mothers soon after birth because they were unmarried, and it's a stigma in India for a woman to have a baby before marriage. Mm-hmm. So these babies were found at the age of 2 days, 3 days, and they were in miserable conditions. So we found about 128 of these babies. Wow. And we found homes for them and rehabilitated them. So that was also a part of the work that we were both involved in.
Well, it's so important to, I think, work in small ways and to help individuals as much as possible, because that really is helping the world. But that leads us into my next question. Of course, your grandfather is the amazing, honorable Mahatma Gandhi. Tell us about your experiences. You are his fifth grandson. Tell us about your experiences with your grandfather.
Yes, I am his grandson, I was fortunate to have lived with him for about 1.5-2 years between the age of 12 and 14, and learned a lot of lessons from him, and those lessons made a tremendous effect on my life, and it gave me a better understanding of his philosophy of nonviolence too.
What would you equate it to? Your grandfather at the time was already a very famous activist, and the struggle for independence was ongoing. How would you compare it to?
Yeah.
I don't know if you could compare it to a normal grandfather-grandson relationship. How do you see it in that perspective?
Yes, certainly. It was a wonderful experience. He was a very loving grandfather to me. And he spent a lot of time with me, 1 hour every day, and taught me lessons and helped me with my homework and just, was a loving grandfather, told me stories and all that. So it was a wonderful thing to see that in spite of his busy schedule, that he was able to devote time for me every day and spend that time with me.
Well, as a grandparent, I have 3 grandchildren and 1 on the way. I understand that special relationship. But what are some of the lessons that he taught you that you've been using in your life or that you've been trying to impart to others?
Yeah, I can tell you that. He taught me, for instance, I was born and brought up in South Africa, and I suffered a lot of prejudices there, and the prejudices, it involved beatings and all kinds of things. I was beaten up by whites and then by blacks. And it filled me with a lot of rage, and I wanted eye for an eye justice. And, my parents took me to India, and the first lesson that my grandfather taught me was about understanding that anger and being able to channel that energy constructively and intelligently for the good of humanity rather than abuse the energy. And so I was able, he told me that anger is like electricity, that it's just as useful and just as powerful, but only if we use it intelligently, but it can be just as deadly and destructive if we abuse it. So just as we channel electrical energy and bring it into our lives and use it for the good of humanity, we must learn to channel anger in the same way so that we can use that energy for the good of humanity rather than abuse it and cause death and destruction. And I think that was a very important lesson, because we tend to ignore this altogether. We don't teach our children about anger and about how to use that energy constructively. So everybody ends up abusing anger. And,
well,
it causes death and destruction.
I find that oftentimes that unchanneled anger turns to bitterness. Did your grandfather ever have any problem with that? Because he must have been angry. He must have gotten angry sometimes.
Yes, he did get angry, but he always channeled that anger into constructive use. I mean, he tried to find constructive solutions to it, and very often he did find constructive solutions. The times when he didn't find constructive solutions, he just tried to, work out another, solution that would be equitable to everybody. And so it was always using his anger constructively and effectively.
And I read where after he was assassinated, you were very angry and you had thoughts of revenge, but your parents steered you back to your grandfather's teachings at that point.
Yes. That was one of the times when I gave in to my anger and I expressed my desire to kill the person who had done this. And that's when my parents reminded me of the lessons that grandfather taught me and that he wouldn't appreciate this kind of reaction from me. And they taught me how to forgive and move on. The modern day everybody talks about forgiving and forgetting, but he said that we never forget anything. We always mm-hmm. remember it, but what we need to do is to forgive unconditionally and move on and create an atmosphere where such madness doesn't take place anymore. So that's what I did.
Well, it's very human to be angry and to seek out these, to have thoughts of revenge, but I think it's very sacred to move along a different path.
Right. It is human to be angry. I mean, anger is a very good thing. It's not something that we need to be ashamed of. What we need to be ashamed of is the way we abuse anger and cause all the distress that we experience today. What we need to do is learn how to use that energy positively and constructively so that it helps us in finding solutions to the problems rather than, causing death and destruction.
Well, let's move on to my last question for you. I noticed that you have a blog in the Washington Post, and the last blog you wrote, at least that I saw referenced, was one on Islamophobia in the United States. What are your thoughts on this rising tide of Islamophobia and the effect it's having on U.S. foreign policy?
Well, I think it's very unfortunate that this is happening. We shouldn't be doing this. And I think the anger and the hate that each has for the other has its roots in the desire of the two religions, Islam and Christianity, to change the whole world to their way of worship and thinking. And I think that is ridiculous, that, those days are gone. We cannot go around converting people. We have to be more respectful and understanding. And unfortunately, these two religions have not moved in that direction. They still are anchored in the past, and they still see visions of converting people to Christianity or Islam. And that competition between the two has created this enmity and anger and frustration, which manifests itself in periods of violence. And it just deepens the hate and the prejudice against each other. Religion is about love and understanding and compassion. It's not at all about hate and anger and prejudice and killing. And so we have distorted our understanding of religion, and we use religion and the name of God to kill people, and that's not right.
Well, there's a famous quote of your grandfather. He said something like, I like your Christ, but I don't like your Christians. They're nothing like your Christ," or something like that. I know I just made up a mess of that.
The exact situation is that, in the 1930s, there were many Christians who came to India to convert the so-called untouchable people. Because the leader of the Untouchables declared that if the Hindu people don't change and transform and reform, that he was going to take all these 150 million so-called untouchable people and find a new religion. So all the Christians, were drooling over the idea of getting 150 million new recruits there.
Mm-hmm.
So they came to India, and they were trying to do their best to convince these untouchables to join Christianity. They would stand on street corners and denounce Hinduism and offer good, relations in Christianity. Then after some time, some of these Christian priests who were also very friendly with my grandfather came to him and asked him, says, "We are offering them so much dignity and all that, and yet they are not responding to us. Why do you think that is the case?" And grandfather told them, "The day you stop talking about how good Christianity is and start living it, people will come on their own." And I think that's basically true of all religions. We talk a lot about how good our religion is, but we seldom live it and show it through our life. And so I think, that's the quote that he referred to.
Well, thank you for that perspective. That was really meaningful. But how can my listeners find out more information about your project and your speaking tours and your books and things like that?
Well, my website is gandhiforchildren.org. It's all one word, and it's F-O-R-4, not the figure 4. The website also has some of my lecture tours. I have not been able to keep it updated all the time because some of the lecture dates come in at the last moment and I don't have the time to update it. But most of the travel programs are listed there and they can get an idea from there where I'm going to be speaking.
Well, Arun Gandhi, thank you for being on Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox, and we wish you continued strength for the journey and for the struggle.
Thank you very much for having me on your show and giving me the opportunity to share my point of view.
And I hope our paths cross again soon.
Thank you. Yes, I hope so too.
Well, that was our guest, the Honorable Arun Gandhi, fifth grandson of Mahatma Gandhi. I hope you enjoyed the show today. As always, I'd like to thank my engineer, Scott Cuddy, my webmaster, Rich Bowser, my producer, Mikey, and you for listening. I hope you tune in next week. I'm Cindy Sheehan. You've been listening to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox. And we're going to end the show again with that song that everybody loved by the White Stripes called Ball and a Biscuit.
the seventh song. Up on a biscuit, sugar. We take our sweet little time about it. On a biscuit, sugar. Yeah, take a sweet little time about it. Hey, let's have a ball. Yeah, take a sweet little time about it. Let everybody in the place to just get out of here.